Hello and welcome to another Connecting Consciousness. Today's the 15th, Saturday, and we're hoping that this will go out as normal tomorrow, Sunday the 16th. It'll be a slightly different one because it's one of the specials that we're doing, which means that I just wanted to try and take the questions with a little bit more in-depth answer. So there'll be less questions, but more of an in-depth answer. And these questions have been taken off the comments section. So they're not the emails that have come in with the questions. These are in direct response to a few weeks ago now, where I said that if people wanted to ask questions that were slightly different, and maybe we would do a special on that. The other special, which is going to have some of the music, some of the musicians who have very kindly given us their version of their own songs, so we don't have any copyright issues. In response to the talk about the change in the frequencies of music, so that, you know, we now have concert pitch 440. So we've got quite a few people who have allowed me to do a quick interview with them and have done the music. Some of it's been done live, but many of these people obviously live abroad, and sometimes the quality was poor. So in as many cases as possible, we've asked them to do a pre-record and send that in. But what I have insisted on is that some of the live ones are shown as well, so that you do get the feeling for how it went. So that's exciting. So very quickly, a bit of news update. The president of America has a new chief of staff, or very shortly to have a new chief of staff. He's gone for a civilian, and he's let go of the general. From my understanding, was agreed, it was okay, but he had to run that past the military side, because this guy was a general, was very high up, and was one of the key founders for getting Trump into the position he was in. I think Trump is a very difficult person to work with on occasion, and so it's quite natural from time to time that certain people have a burnout after a while, but they did leave amicably. That's a really important point to make, and Trump was quite glowing in his final farewells to the general. So that's occurring. Politics should be sort of running down a little bit now in the States, ready to get a bit more excitable in the beginning of the new year. Some dates are being talked about: 22nd, 24th, 26th, 28th of December, for the beginnings of the long-awaited opening of the indictments in terms of large numbers. I'm not sure that that's the date we'd be looking at. I think we're much more likely to be looking at the new year. And it's interesting that the QAnon website is now publishing the indictment lists as well. And it's quite good if you compare the ones I've got from there. They come from different sources, but they're almost identical. And I think that would be quite useful if people were to have a look at the QAnon information and just check what they've got there. Because QAnon is largely run by the United States military, who are backing Trump. All right, okay. Today, I sent out a short email to all members of Connecting Consciousness, thanking them very much for their support for 2018. Very much looking forward to their support in the coming year, looking at the challenges, and sent out a separate email to all the coordinators of Connecting Consciousness throughout the world, wherever you're based, thanking you specifically for your work in running groups. So, you know, I know lots and lots of different faiths listen to the show. So I can't just say Happy Christmas. I decided that I would just say Happy Holidays. But you know, it is Christmas here in Great Britain, but there are lots of different faiths that don't necessarily follow that. So I think I've ended all my emails saying Happy Holiday, and if you're not having a holiday, you should have one, most definitely. Just for interesting fun, I told the London Connecting Consciousness group to take a 2-week holiday, and they seemed a bit upset at that, so I've said they want to meet unofficially. They can, as long as there's a coordinator sort of there, but really and truly we all deserve a bit of a break, so please have a holiday. Right, Becky's going to read out some of these questions. Mm-hmm. The first question is not a nice question, and it's from a guy that has consistently written negative comments on the feed. He's a prolific writer of negativity about me. What's his name, Becky?
Kerno Warty.
So I thought we'd take it. We'd take one of the questions. In fact, it was one of the less abusive ones, so we were doing that. Now, why somebody who really, really doesn't like me, why they listen to me every week is beyond me. But anyway, would you please read out his question? So this is a question from a guy who calls himself Kerno Warty. Go on then.
Yeah, because they are not emails. People haven't given him their names. These are just their YouTube. They're just names their, that they've given.
Yeah, to. I'm sure everyone will recognise it. I'll have to keep their eyes open for it.
I think all the listeners will. Okay, so this is from Kerno Warty. Yeah, I for one would love to ask you about your alien experiences. My main question would be, why have you never taken photographs or videos of them that you could show us as proof of these aliens who you allegedly meet up with? It does not all happen in the astral realm, so where are the photos, Simon? A few childlike drawings of them does not cut the mustard, matey.
All right, well, first of all, I'm not your mate. I'm not your mate. I have actually answered this question maybe 3, 4, 5 years ago, when a very negative person from the BBC who was trying to have a go at me asked me the very same question. In fact, he actually said, and this is in all seriousness, this BBC reporter said to me, well, why can't you steal a ray gun or something? That's exactly what he said. Why can't you steal a ray gun or something? And I thought, well, you sound as if you're back in the 1950s. You know, people like to shake my head. So, Kerno Warty, let's answer your questions. Right. In the first instance, when any person is abducted or taken, the brain patterns that you normally have in your everyday life are altered. So you're not thinking in exactly the same way. And one example would be, if you are going to be taken off the planet, there is a natural human reaction to be frightened. Even NASA astronauts who train very, 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 very vigorously to go up in a rocket and get off out of Earth's gravity, they must be pretty damn scared each time they go up there. So for those of us who don't have the benefit of a NASA training, and that's me, absolutely, they'll go in and they'll numb the mind down. If I was to grab a camera or my cell phone or mobile phone, it can tell you that it wouldn't be allowed on there. The whole point about what they do is not to have it spread around in a large environment. It's to work with individually. And if you listen to other genuine contactees or abductees, in most cases it's on a one-to-one basis. Occasionally it's more than one-to-one. There are group abductions, and there have been pictures that other people have taken. And there's another aspect to it which is very important for me, is that I think it would be the greatest betrayal. I have an ongoing relationship which works both ways. I don't intend to damage or destroy that, because the assistance or the information I get is quite useful, and I can even feed that through, as we do with the podcasts and the radio shows. And so to do anything that would break that trust, it just wouldn't be in my way of doing it. But they certainly wouldn't allow a camera through. And I remember a very genuine woman about 5 or 6 years ago who told me that she was having these visitations, and she said they come often into the kitchen, and she said, and I might be preparing the meal and I'll have a sharp knife and I'm cutting vegetables. And she said, how do they know that that is not of an offensive weapon that I'm going to use on them? How do they know that? And I've said, well, you know, because they can go into your mind and they'll just basically make sure that you don't use it against them. That's why no aliens are reported. Genuine people don't report aliens with weapons. They just don't need them. They have advanced technology. They've been on planets far longer than we've been evolved, therefore their brain capacities are far greater than ours. They are able to enhance their psychic capabilities with technology, and therefore they can go into human minds and they can tweak them, or they can be really, really, really nasty to them. So what I'm saying is that even if I wanted to take a camera, unless they wanted me to do that, that was not going to happen. So, you know, you don't believe me, and that's fine, but why do you listen to me? You know, go and listen to somebody who doesn't believe in aliens and go and join their club. So thank you very much for that, Rebecca. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Deborah says, why do all of the alternative media people ignore the vaccine injury problem?
Wow.
That is a worldwide issue and our children are being destroyed. So many sick children these days. It's so very sad. Thank you for all you do. I look forward to your podcasts.
Thank you. The reason is because they're frightened. They're frightened. The reason that the vast majority of people will not, with good reason, they won't publicly come out and make allegations for two very strong reasons. The first is that they are very likely to be taken to court and sued for thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars. And secondly, they are liable to end up dead on a railroad line or in a ditch. And that's not me being melodramatic. If we look back the last 2 years at the number of guys pushing alternative medicine, not all of them amateurs, some of them professional doctors, the number of what's been described as suicides, or officially accepted as suicides, is astronomical. So the reason that most commentators will not tackle that issue is because they are fearful of being financially destroyed, or worse still, them and their families being murdered. And that's exactly what it is. That's not just in the Western world, it's actually permeating now to any country where very large, unscrupulous organizations are pushing their vaccines or their drugs. Remember, not all vaccines are evil. Not all vaccines are bad. There are some which do a very good job. But there are quite a few that I certainly, you know, if I had the choice, certainly wouldn't want. And I would recommend people not to have it. You know, but I don't make a judgment because people who are aware of the truth and have had threats, which they take very seriously, have to decide what's more important. Is it themselves, their life, or their loved ones? You know, and I don't make any judgment about that. And that's why we need a completely different environment where people, we wouldn't need to campaign because it would just naturally be changed. So that, you know, that's what we're aiming for, not just where it's legal to criticise or it's okay to criticise big corporations without fear of the repercussions. But, you know, we want a society where we don't even need to do that, because those issues or problems no longer exist. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mama Cordella and Blue Ember ask, why is California in such deep trouble?
California for a long time has been separate, say from the Union. It's been separate from the federal government. It has a history of not implementing or resisting, and there have been about three or four handful of states that originally under the days of Obama wrote back to the federal government and asked for their gold back. And for Europeans who won't have a concept of that, let me please just quickly explain that the federal government holds gold on behalf of the American people, but it is proportioned for the number of people per state. So each American state is entitled to the equal population, the percentage, and technically is in a position to write in to the president and ask for their gold back. Now, Texas was one of the states that actually did do that. and California was rumoured to have done that as well. Of course, Texas is the home of the Bushes, and it's the home of oil, and it's unlikely that Texas would receive too many issues or problems. California, of course, is not the home and is quite a rebellious state, and it's got a history of, as I say, of questioning. So it isn't that California has upset President Trump. California, over the last 25 years, has upset individuals who operate ostensibly in government, aren't really in government, but they are pushing certain policies which the federal government enact. And it's those people that, that there's a disagreement on. And we've also got to understand, perhaps, that California is a bit of a testing bed for aerial weapons, whether that's weather weapons, environmental weapons, whether it's to try and create small earthquakes, whether it's offers large areas of land that they can test their energy weapons. And so there's a lot going on, and I have always said, you know, it is generally California that gets it. Remember, it's very powerful. The most powerful person in the United States of America, in terms of the democracy, the elected democracy, is the president. The second most powerful person outside of a state of emergency is, in fact, the governor of California. It is not the vice president. That's why, and I've said before, why Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was a very strong supporter of the Republican Party and had lots of photo opportunities with the younger Bush, and I think possibly the older Bush as well, but you put people into these positions that you trust. But even if the head is going in one direction or looking in one direction, the body might be going in another direction. I'm hoping after these indictments get opened and sorted, actually, that will be the end of this war between the federal government and California. It's a really important question. It just seems to be that the difficulties for California are growing and growing and growing. And it was interesting, I think, just to finally finish, that when some of these well-known names that Hollywood second homes film stars lived in, when that suddenly started to cause huge media coverage, then the fires then suddenly magically started to reduce. And that, I thought, was very key. Okay, let's have the next one, please.
Okay, thank you. Paranit says, thanks for your good work. Do you have any inside information on what is happening with Julian Assange? Is he still in the embassy? Is there an arrest warrant for him in the States? Is he still alive?
Well, you remember, perhaps you might remember, that there was this stuff going around. He was already dead and the body had been carried out, etc., etc. And I never subscribed to that. He'd been told by President Trump that he was no longer on the arrest list. And to my knowledge, there isn't an indictment waiting on him. There is one outstanding warrant, which is from a European country, which is some allegation about some sex or something, rape, I think. But what he's trying to do is to negotiate a release where he won't be continually hounded. Again, this is not really in the president's preserve. It's not like somebody who's been through a legal process where the president has some legal rights. This is a person that hid in an embassy and then claimed diplomatic immunity. Some countries like Ecuador don't have an extradition policy with the US and don't particularly get on well with the US government, regardless of which political party is in power. So he is alive. There are ongoing negotiations, I understand, so that he can be released without fear of being killed within 24 hours. So that's where we stand with it. There was an interesting connection between some of the key whistleblowers and WikiLeaks and American intelligence. you know, and I've said before, it wasn't the Russians that were leaking information about this, that, and the other during the election campaign. It was actually WikiLeaks providing information to predominantly the CIA, or one element of the CIA, and more importantly, the NSA. And sometimes the NSA was circumventing the CIA and putting this information out. So it wasn't the Russians who were meddling in the election and the defeat of Hillary Clinton. It was actually the American, or one arm of the American intelligence. You know, and it is on record that some members of the CIA, some members of the NSA, referred to Hillary Clinton as the Antichrist. So they were working, you won't get this publicly, but they were working with WikiLeaks. They were working with Assange. And so what Assange is saying is, well, can we cut a deal now? I can be released. I won't be, you know, hit. And I won't open my mouth. And that's, I think, where they're going, because the intelligence services don't know whether they can trust him. You know, if he was to write a book, it would sell like hotcakes. And I think the intelligence services want to be absolutely sure that if they did agree to anything, he would keep his mouth shut until the day he died. But whistleblowers over the last 10, 15, 20 years on this planet have predominantly not kept their mouth shut, thank goodness, and have come out. So that's the situation at the moment. He's not dead. He's trying to negotiate how he's treated once he leaves the protection of the embassy. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Somebody called Ki Jong Four has talked a bit about how he enjoys listening to your shows. I would like you to delve a bit deeper into the moon and how it's its effect on the Earth, and also the Saturn connection.
Well, we've covered it in a number of shows, and there's some pretty good information out on YouTube, which I haven't looked at, but some people have said to me, oh, this, that, and the other. And
yeah, David Icke, I think, does a very good one on the Saturn connection.
I'm sure. And, you know, you really, it would pay you, actually, because I've got so much respect for David Icke. It would pay you to listen to that. But what I can just reiterate is that, as far as I'm concerned, the moon up there is not a God-created, source-created object. It is an artificial creation. We know from things that have happened that it has sent back a hollow sound when certain space debris have landed on that. The microphones that are already placed there and are working have recorded almost a sort of a ringing sound. And that ties in very nicely with some of the I say testimony, but remembered records, particularly from the Zulus and other tribes, who can remember the original moon being removed and the new moon, or the secondary moon, coming into place. In fact, the Zulus call it, the moon was rolled into its position. So if you have a very important asset on the Earth, and that is humans, and you want to control those humans, then you need a base that observes the Earth, not just inside the Earth, but observes the Earth, because if you're inside the Earth, it is harder to intercept something that's coming from space. If you have a base in the Earth, that is designed to control the Earth-based humans. But by having a base or bases on the moon, on the far side of the moon, give it its technical term, then you are in a better position to intercept anything that's coming towards the Earth. I think I'm right in saying that the moon is the only object in space that doesn't spin and show both sides or all sides. It is unique in the sense that it just can presents the one face. And this is my exasperation with doctors and professors of astronomy, is that why isn't there, or why aren't there, huge reports, papers, professional journals and professional documents asking and questioning and trying to understand why the moon just presents one side when every other object, you know, spins and shows all sides? Why does the professional world just shrug their shoulders and say, oh, well, that's the way it is. Whereas, you know, if somebody wants to investigate a drop of water, they can get a grant and there can be umpteen pages written on that. So what is it that's so frightening to academics that they won't touch it? It's exactly the same. My answer, it's a rhetorical question, is exactly the same as the Egyptologists, professional men and women who look at the history, look at the archaeology, and realise that the testimony, the story of officialdom, that these things are 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years old is just nonsense. But they got a pension. They want to be invited to the astronomers, as let's call it the astronomers and archaeologists' Christmas dinner, the annual dinner. And if you're not in favour, you don't get invited to that very lovely dinner. You don't have an office, you're not a fellow of the society, you don't get asked by the BBC or the world press to give an opinion. Nobody wants to hear you. Nobody asks you to speak at an after-dinner talk. And that is why these professional people shy away from topic that they know full well is something they're not permitted to speak on. So the moon contained a base, just as Mars did. And we call the bases Adam and Eve. These are the two bases that are probably created by a faction of the grey race. And then they were totally decommissioned and left for dead for goodness knows how long. Then they were reactivated perhaps back in the 1980s, something like that, late 70s, early 80s. Not quite sure on that date, but around then. There are a number of other bases which are even older than those, and this is maintained on the far side in terms of the access points. I mean, the number of satellites that have taken pictures, and lots of testimony of, you know, American servicemen whose job was to airbrush out any pictures that were being sold to the public, and you know, there was a department where they just literally went through and airbrushed out. They didn't get all of it, you know. And if you go online, you can still find pictures that do show stuff both on Earth and on Mars. So the moon is more of a physical control. Excuse me, it's more of a physical control in the sense that this is where the hardware for the bases and the craft are located. It's far reduced now than it was. It's much less active. You've got planets like Saturn, which are much more of an artificial control system. So frequencies being beamed out from the crystalline rings. That's a massive aerial. A part of a network designed to control humans. Now, when we sit back and we look at the magnitude of the operation to control this planet, it's mind-blowing. The amount and the creativity, sadly being used negatively, but the creativity and the technological wonder that's been used shows you just how valuable humans are to a group or a range of groups of people or pseudo people who wish to farm humans, observe humans, manipulate humans. You know, and it's sort of an old joke, but as the fish in its fish tank. And that actually is a good analogy. So we have a huge structure that is put in place, both physical and non-physical, designed to manipulate humans. And so it is right to say that the Earth is still in a quarantine in terms of who visits and who doesn't visit. But the playing field has been levelled. We're at a more level position than we've ever been in Earth's history. That's why so much is coming out. And so the moon is an integral part of the control system. So why would anybody want to go to the moon? Well, there was all the politics with JFK and the Russians. There was the need for black projects to be superbly funded by money that legitimately came in through federal government and then went out the back door, and all the other side issues that went along with that. So Stanley Kubrick's you know, 2001 A Space Odyssey, and I've done talks, and many other people have done talks on it. So to wrap up on this one then, the Moon is an artificial satellite. It was placed with one intention only, to be like a, a launch pad, a base to lock down the Earth, excuse me, because humans are the most valuable asset in the fourth dimension. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Saturn, I've heard that Saturn, the rings are made either of ice or crystal, and they're part of a sort of, they create a ringing sound. And what about the hexagon at one of the poles?
Well, I think they're crystalline because, you know, we know that off-planet entities use crystals far more advanced than we have yet a concept on this Earth. The 1947 Roswell space crash, the nose array, the array in the front of the craft that acted as a radar does, but these were crystal blocks or lumps of crystal that had been angled and cut in a certain way. So crystals are about frequency, and the rings on Saturn, I believe, are like that. Now the dot or the mark is always at the same degree of the tilt of the planet, and that's no coincidence. This is where I think the powerhouse is. This is the energy that's being produced, and that actually creates the energy which then the rings of Saturn actually will vibrate at that set frequency. What I'm not clear on is how it's beamed here. It's possible that all of this solar system is covered with that. Therefore, this solar system is kept in this matrix reality. So perhaps it's not just a narrow focus beam to the Earth, but within our third dimension, within the confines of official space travel, shall we call it, there is a false reality created by this. And once you get beyond that, then you escape that and you see the real reality for what it is. So yeah, really good point. But do listen to David Icke's talk on Saturn. It's well worth it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ambrosia 188 says, can you please talk about the lion or the cat, the lion slash cat race? It would be lovely to hear more than the basics. Where are they from? What dimension? The day-to-day life, family life, are they incarnating as humans, and are they enemies of the reptilians?
Okay, so there's quite a few questions. So maybe I'll just do an overview, and then I can just ask you to check back, because I probably will forget most of those. Those of you who've been aware of me for a while know that one of my greatest claims to fame, if that's the right word, was talking about the feline race, as we would probably call them. And when I first was old enough to sort of buy a book, I did have to look to see what was available. There was very little on that particular race at all. And in fact, I only ever found, I think, one or two books. And no disrespect to the author, they were small. They were very, very small pamphlet books. And didn't really tell me very much. And in fact, I knew more than the pamphlet, and I thought, wow, is this really all there is on them? And then I did, you know, research perhaps 5, 6, 7 years ago online, and found absolutely precious little. So it's one of those races that doesn't come up a great deal in the public eye, and yet it is one of the races that's had one of the most profound effects on humanity. So I'll tell you what I know, and others can possibly add to it. That's really exciting. So originally, we would call them the flying lions. That's our term, and their term as well, but I don't quite know. That's how you sort of translate. But if it roughly translates into flying lions. And they originally came from one of the habitable planets in the Orion system. For reasons that I don't know, there was a falling out, and part of this race left. And I mean, literally, you can imagine you lose 10, 15%, 20% of your population. And so it's not just a, you know, we're going on a vacation. It's, we really want to start a new world. And so this group, this splinter group left and colonized a habitable planet in the Sirius or Sirius star system. Now, whether there were other living creatures there or not, I just don't know. But this group then, after millions of years, evolved so much that they were different from the original group. So although they shared a common ancestry, and some of the rules and regulations were similar, they, for all intents and purposes, treated themselves as a new race. Now, the name that they take is the Khetkuri. Khetkuri. And I sort of joke, well, it's not a joke, but it's funny, is that they work quite a lot with the American military, the US military, and some American military service personnel, when this first happened, couldn't quite get their mouths or their head around that, so they call them the Kilroti. The Kilroti, because that's possibly how they heard it in their heads and how they would then say it. But it's not Kilroti, it's the Khetkuri. So these are descendants from what we call the Orion flying lions. The Orion system is a patriarchal masculine system, but the Sirius star systems are matriarchal, female. So it might well be that there was a sexes split. So we've got the Khetkuri that are controlled by a caste system. There are two caste systems. One is the royalty and one is everyone else. So you have the royal line, and the queen will be the most senior. There's a king, but the queen is the boss. And there are royal children. But that's it. There are other, you know, grades in terms of somebody might be an administrator or a scientist or what have you, but they are all grouped in everyone else. They are probably between 3 and 5, it's very difficult, maybe three to four times stronger than we are physically. So they're physically strong. They stand around the 6 foot mark, perhaps just a little bit less. So they're round about the 6 foot mark. They do wear clothes. Ones I've seen wear clothes. They have a symbol which, when I first saw it around the neck, I assumed it to be like a flying bird, like a seagull. You know, there's the body and then the arms up here. That was an emblem worn here, and it looked like a flying bird, but it actually represented the flying lions. They have the capability to travel, to move, it appears, unaided. And that's very interesting. When they've materialized in my presence, they don't do what reptilians or mantis do, or greys do. They materialize and they're walking on the floor. Generally, these beings don't. They'll be literally 5 foot, 6 foot off the ground, and they'll be in a flying mode, not like Superman with the hands out the front. They don't hold their arms out like birds. They just have them just in any position, and they are literally appear anyway to be flying, and then they'll literally just turn. So their head is up and their feet are down, they'll just drop. So there's a period that they're coming through a portal and drop down. telepathic, of course, and all these things, these are fourth dimensional. Are they the enemies of the reptilians? No, they're not. They are very, very cautious of the reptilians. They were in an agreement with the reptilians. Most fourth dimensional beings did make a pact with the reptilians because they were the bully. They were the strongest being in the area. And you may not actually like them, but you would do a deal with them so that you didn't get destroyed. Because that's what the reptilians did and do. If they can't manipulate you, and they give you some autonomy, you know, they do allow to keep their own kings and queens. But if they fell out, there would be a hell of a war. So you will find that the greatest cooperation with the reptilians was over the pyramid. The Great Pyramid, 1 part was Orion and one part was Cyrus or Sirius, and the ruling groups were taken in turns to manage that facility. So that's why both Orion and Cyrus are so strongly represented in the more recent pharaoh history. The archaeologists understand the gods as they understand it, and Orion and Sirius are part of that. So I've tried my best. Are there a couple of other questions with that I've missed?
No, I don't think so, because you included where they're from, the dimension.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Have they ever incarnated as humans on their day-to-day life and family life?
Oh, yes. Right. Okay. Just like any soul from another dimension that is compatible with humanity, it can incarnate. And there are... I haven't met many people, perhaps just a handful over the last 8 years or so, but definitely there are people that you know, look very lionish, shall we say, and just like any other type of soul, they all incarnate, but they're not prolific on this planet. They're very few and far between. Family life, all of the boys, the male children, the name when translated into humans begins with an R. So all the males, their name when translated into English would start with an R. And I've forgotten the females.
It is a Z.
Thank you. All the females, when their name is translated, starts with a Z. Just as you would look at many reptilians, and their letters would start with an S, or an R, or a TH. So they do follow a very strong culture, which we don't have in the third dimension in humanity. You know, we will choose a name in the Western world that suits us, but if you were back in a native environment, you would then be more constrained, because you might choose a name after an animal because you wanted to represent that, or a river or a star. So humanity has chosen names in its past which have represented something to it. Now, in the Western world at least, we don't seem to do that. We just choose a name because we like it. So we've lost that reason for naming, that connection for naming. It's almost that we just have a name now for a birth certificate, you know, rather than, you know, Chief Running River or what have you, because that person showed their connection to the land. They didn't have a birth certificate which, you know, valued them and said that it owned them. And so nowadays we just have any name. We might as well just be given numbers. I mean, obviously we won't, because we're not going to go down that road, but intents and purposes for the system doesn't care whether we're named or numbered, because we are on a birth register. So they don't do that, and they value their children remarkably better than we seem to value ours. And this Western world, we seem to believe that we own our child until he or she is 18. That seems to be the view. You know, the law would say, well, you're responsible for a child. But the way it's worked on this planet, it's almost like that we sort of, that responsibility is taken to owning them. Whereas what the experiences I've had and the examples I've been shown, they treat their children as if they were adults. So they literally teach them and treat them as if they were sort of 20 years old. And I remember one occasion picking up one of these children and it kicking its legs and waving its arms about. And I said to the mother, what's that about, you know? And the reply was, well, that's the first time that child has ever been handled in that fashion. You see, on Earth, it's perfectly natural for a father to pick up his child and lift it up in the air. You know, that's something that happens on this planet. Now, whether that's something that we naturally want to do, or whether we've been programmed through Hollywood, I honestly couldn't say. But that's what I did, because I wanted to lift the child up to eye height. I didn't want to look down on the child. I felt that was, you know, that wasn't good, because I didn't want to be, I'm the big adult, and I'm going to look down on you. So, but they didn't do that, because just as the mother said to me, you know, you wouldn't do that to an adult, so we don't do it to the child. And that was really, really interesting, because it's a completely different concept. And she further went on to say, you know, that is why when there are hybridized children, we generally don't leave them on Earth, because you can't look after them properly. You know, we want them so that we can bring them up in the way that they're accustomed to. So an interesting race, not aggressively violent towards humans. They tend to keep themselves to themselves, but they have run joint projects with other races on the Earth. So they are deeply connected to Earth. And finally, another, NASA has done its best to make fun of the face on Mars. And if you can get hold of the original Viking pictures of the face on Mars, and the second one, there were three pictures. The third one was digitally altered. I don't care what NASA says, the third one was completely altered to make it look as if it was natural. But if you look at the first and the second satellite pictures, and you get a piece of paper and you cut off on the face the chin and the mouth, you get a very cat-like looking face. And you can also put the paper two halves of the face, and it is a combination of human and cat, human and feline. And we know from the military side that Mars was a base for a feline group, working in tandem with others. And you know, there's pyramids on Mars, and that's because they built them, or had a hand in building them, as they did when they came to what is now ancient Egypt and built a pyramid. You know, so here's the connection that runs through it. Not violent to humans. If you were to meet one, you wouldn't have to run for your life. It's not like meeting a reptilian. Thank you for the question.
Okay, thank you. I was just thinking when you were talking about them, about whether they consider themselves to be more spiritually evolved than us as humans, and whether the beings that you interact with are truly representational of their species, or whether they are a more advanced aspect of them.
Right, you put two questions in there, Rebecca. What was the first one?
Do they consider themselves to be more advanced than us, especially in terms of raising their children?
Right. They consider themselves, just like the reptilians, they consider themselves to be much more advanced technologically. They consider themselves to be much more advanced practically. You see, spirituality is a human thing, actually. It's the human groups that have this. The others don't have it, or if they do, it's in a much smaller amount, and this is what they're frankly they're jealous of. Instead of trying to come down and steal it, they should actually try and learn how to connect to source. But that's another thing. So they consider themselves superior because they're physically superior, technologically superior, but they're not emotionally dead like a reptilian might be. They're not all reptilians, not all reptilians are emotionally dead, but I tell you what, the best way to describe it would be that the Kekkeri understand jokes. The Kekkeri understand jokes and can make jokes. They don't sort of say, you know, a New Yorker and a Canadian were driving in a yellow cab, etc., etc., but they will mirror back at you. So if you say something and then maybe a month or a week later, they will use what you've said, but in a funny, in a jokey way. So they are capable of that, which the reptilians are not capable of. So they do have some, so if I can use the word, they have some humanity. Are they, were they representative? No, not really, because I saw the royal line, and I did not see, although the bodyguards are not royal. The bodyguards come from the ordinary group, And the bodyguards, as you would expect, it's not just on human terms, the bodyguards were physically bigger. Not taller, but just more stocky and more muscular. So no, it wasn't representative, because I only seen maybe three or four different individuals. And you can't say that that's representative. I mean, if I'd seen thousands, I'd say that was. So no, it wasn't representative. But was it representative of the people? Yes, because there were people who were in the royal line, and there were the bodyguards who were not in the royal line. So that was representative. But in terms of privilege and rank, I don't know. That's not something that came up.
Okay, thank you. Actually, talking about humour leads really nicely on into the next question by Michael G, who writes, "Hi Simon, quite a few people who have encountered mantis beings report that they have been told corny jokes." The at Sandia Wisdom ETs have a great sense of humour. I don't know what at Sandia
is. I don't know either.
It says there's something or other ETs. Have a great sense of humour, and some channelings of ascended masters reflect a wonderful humour, etc. What is your experience with non-Earth surface human humour, and is it a reflection of ours?
Oh, very clever, question. Okay, let's just hold it, because that's really clever.
It's a tongue twister.
Well, they understand, right? What we've got here is, in the mantid or mantis beings, a need to want to engage with humanity. Unlike the reptilians, who don't need to do it in that sense of the word, they just do it. So what the mantids or mantis have tried to do is to understand the concept of humour. They can make jokes, and they attempt to make jokes, and they mirror humanity. This is why I thought the question was good. In other words, when a reptilian is talking to you, he or she will very rarely use their hands, because they don't use their hands to express themselves. So when they're telepathically sending you a message, you know, they don't bang their fist down on the table. But what a mantis or mantid that I've seen, when talking to them, they will be like an Italian, and they will wave their hands around. Because they have learnt that humans express themselves with their hands. So I think that mantis have always been very dexterous with their long fingers, and through sending signals, they will use a non-telepathic communication by the way that they physically use their hands. But in terms of humanity, they've attempted to copy. So in terms of that, they understand that. In terms of jokes, they understand it. They also, much more than the reptilians, have made a great study of human culture. So literally, they monitor television channels. They will go into a person's mind, and they will understand that that person is not just about themselves, but the life that they've had, and therefore they will follow through and connect. So for instance, in about 1960, somewhere between, I can't be sure, between 1965 and 1968, there in Great Britain, there was a cartoon character called Tufty, and he was used by the Road Safety Bureau to go around to all the different schools and to show videos of this cartoon character and how to safely cross the road. And it was, you know, Tufty taught us to look left, look right, look left, look right, and if it's all clear, cross the road. So in 1971, when I was being encouraged to go into what looked like a very foreboding tank, I don't mean a battle tank, I mean a chamber, and I wasn't going to do it, the character that was with me, which was a mantis, appeared in my mind to be Tufty. Turned into Tufty with a great big bushy tail, because Tufty was a squirrel, by the way, with a great big bushy tail. And so just as Tufty helped school children to cross the road, So Tufty helped me to go into this chamber. So that's the level of understanding they have. Now, it means that they are more able to hold a communication and they're more wanting to understand it. So that's the first part. There was a second bit as well, wasn't there?
I think that's a good thing.
Oh, okay.
I think you've covered that well.
All right.
I was just thinking when you were talking about this, when beings such as mantis or reptilians or the Kitkari communicate with humans, do they do it through? Can they read our minds in terms of language? So if they're reading an English person's mind, they can read English language. Or if it's French, they can read the French, or Italian, they can read the Italian, and so on. Or are they reading pictures and emotions? What level are they understanding communication with people and communicating back with them?
Right, if you understand, and I'm not an expert, don't pretend to be, but when we make sounds with our mouth, we're somehow in our brain, we're hearing a noise and we're trying to replicate that noise. And we would say that you speak German or English or French or Italian or one of the dialects in Africa. But if you go into somebody's mind, that isn't what you'll find. What you'll find is energies. So let's say the word A. I say the word A, other cultures will pronounce that letter differently. But in my mind, I'm not saying A, I'm saying an energy which becomes an A. But what they're doing is they're not at the end of the process. They go into the very beginning of the process.
That's what I was thinking. That's why I asked the question. Because it's almost at what level do they read?
So they'll go straight into your mind.
Yeah.
They are very good, but they're not as good as reptilians at this. Now, the mantids are good, but not as good as a reptilian. Good in the sense of the technology. In other words, if a person thinks, and let's just say, I want to go to the store to buy an ice cream. Okay, I want to go to the store to buy an ice cream. So I think that, and then I'm going to say it. So by the time I've got, I want to go to, a reptilian would already have got to the end of the sentence, even though I've not said it. They've already picked that up. Now, they're faster than the mantis on that. That's what makes them particularly difficult. And it's in the military, it's a sort of an in-joke that a reptilian knows what you're going to say almost before you do yourself. So the mantis operate differently let's just look at the difference between a grey and a mantid. By the way, I'm interchanging the word mantis and mantid. It's the same thing for me. When a grey communicates telepathically with a person, it is not very good at focusing the beam. So it's a bit like a scattergun effect. So if the grey communicates, in most cases, everyone in the room will get the same message. If the grey has a soul in its body, it's not a hive clone, then it can narrow the beam. But most greys will do that. Now, the problem when greys work with children is that the brain frequency that the greys use can be damaging to a baby or a young adult, young child, I should say, can be damaging. What the mantids do is they form a telepathic connection through your eyes. So your ordinary eye, optic nerve to the brain, and what the mantid will do is, and that's what some of the greys do, I'll come back to that. So a mantid will look at you, it doesn't even have to look at you, it can focus to the eyes, although 9 times out of 10 they need to look, straight down the optic nerve, and then to the targeted area in the brain, so it doesn't damage any other part of the brain. It goes to the part of the brain that it wants to work with. Whereas when a grey sends out a communication, all of your brain is flooded with this information. And if you're a baby or a young child, that takes traumatic damage. Now, some of the greys that have been trained will, and many, many people report this, and I've had it, you will open your eyes because your higher self as warning you something's not right. And then you've got a grey about 3 inches or 5 centimetres right over your face. You're in bed and it's leaning right over you, because what it's trying to do is, it doesn't want to hurt you, believe it or not. It's trying to narrow down the beam so that it doesn't do damage to your cortex or the part of your brain. But they've only learned that fairly recently. So lots of people were being damaged and hurt, and they didn't understand why that was occurring. So the mantis, many, many times, it is children that report mantid activity. And that is because the mantid is the most capable of communicating with a baby or a child without causing collateral damage to that child. So that's something you won't find, I guess, in any book or any internet, because people, you know, perhaps not prepared to, who've had those experiences, prepared to be open about it. But I think it's worth knowing. That is why these alien beings conduct themselves differently, because they have a different form of communication with humans. Thank you.
Thank you. That's really helpful. And I've heard as well that reptilians can interpret what we're going to, what we're thinking before we think it, because they get it at the soul level. They're getting it when it's just reached our mental energy layer. You know, we start off with the soul, and then the emotional and the mental.
I'm not going to agree with that.
Okay.
I'm not going to agree with that. I think that the reptilians haven't a clue about a human soul. What they do is, we call it the R brain. This is the part of the brain that controls the basic reflexes of the body. It's called the R brain. It's the reptilian brain. That's the official name for it. It's the breathing. But what happens is that, and you are right, Rebecca, in the sense that when that information reaches the cortex, this is the real thinking part of the brain. But what the reptilians can do is pick up this information before it's been processed. So the wish that I want to stand up and get out of this chair then goes to the next stage, which is, okay, the brain says, how am I going to do that? Well, I've got to move my arms, I've got to move my legs. What the reptilians are doing is picking up at the beginning point, which is, I want to get up. It's not the soul, it's to do with the very basic functions before the higher level can process them. And they are capable of doing that. That's what makes them such dangerous adversaries.
Okay, I understand.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay,
we've got 2 more questions for today's podcast.
God, we've gone through quick.
Yeah, how long have we been? More than an hour.
Oh, good. I didn't want to be less than an hour.
Yeah, so we've just
good.
Got two
do
more.
Do two more, yeah, I'll do them.
Okay, so Mike Cox says, Simon, are you open to the possibility that Pleiadians are supporting President Trump and interfacing with the public through the operation known as QAnon? This is the case according to those in connection with the Pleiadians of Taygeta, in brackets, highest level of Galactic Federation.
If they are, they won't be dealing with Trump directly. Trump is the face. He's the figurehead. Let's be absolutely blunt about it. He is the battleship that can take all the explosions and the shells and still stay afloat. That was his design. That's his job. That's what he volunteered for. The people behind him are the military, and that means that they have access to all of the special programs, although they probably don't share that with President Trump. I know personally that President Trump is fully aware of the alien agenda and disclosure, etc., etc., but that doesn't mean that he's privy to what's going on in the background. Unlike Putin, who actively wants to find out and wants to be in the loop and wants to know, President Trump is like, well, you know, I'm not interested in that. I don't want to know about that. I've got enough to do. And that's fair enough. I'm not passing a judgment. It's just different ways of the men. QAnon is a military group with a really advanced computer, and they undoubtedly will be getting assistance. They won't be getting assistance from the reptilians, because the reptilians will want nothing to do with Trump because of his anti-satanic anti-Luciferian stance. You know, whatever Trump has done in the past, he's not a Satanist. So therefore, the reptilian natural hook isn't there. So it does leave an opportunity for more positive humanoid type aliens to be involved. So although I don't have any direct information about this particular group that you've just mentioned, I certainly know that more than one faction that is proud to call itself humanity is dealing or is engaging with people arm's length from the president. So whilst I can't confirm the name or the group you've used, I can certainly say, yes, this is what's going on at the moment.
Okay, thank you. Our last question for today is from a CC member. Dear Simon, three reptilians with tails appeared once in my vision, and you said it was accurate. On the 11th of August, a white reptilian flashed into my inner vision. He was roaring, absolutely furious. There was a pale blue haze or atmosphere all around. His wide open mouth was bright red inside. His eyes were also red. I didn't know why he was so angry at me. It put me in shock for 3 days.
No, I'm not surprised.
I hadn't been thinking about reptilians. I love them and appreciate their good qualities. Some want to evolve and I'm committed to helping. When I looked into his eyes, it seemed he knew that he was vanquished. Could this have been Anu or someone like that? What was the pale blue atmosphere around him? And has he been vanquished?
Interesting question. Right. Don't have a problem with any of that, except the red mouth. These creatures are for all intents and purposes, albino. And if you've done your research, you know that albinos
have... It was a white mouth inside when he opened his mouth.
You said it was red inside.
A red mouth
inside. That's what I'm saying is wrong.
Okay.
Because an albino will have red eyes on this planet because of the pigmentation there to reflect the light back. I have not seen a red mouth inside the roof of the mouth. I've seen it as white. But that doesn't mean you're wrong. It may be that there are groups that it's this white is not perfect. You know, there are parts of the skin that will come through. Or it could simply be that red is the aggressive colour, red is the angry colour, and therefore it wanted to focus the attention on its mouth because its teeth would have been white. Remember, they have reasonably big teeth, pointy teeth. And so maybe if you were given the red colour in your mind, the white teeth, then they stood out in contrast against the red background very clearly. So that's just an aside point. The haze, the blue haze you're seeing is the creation of an energy portal. Doesn't mean that it's just to bring that image to you. It could be that within its own realm, remember that reptilians that live under the earth or in the earth have to have biostations that can recreate their own ideal habitation, their own ideal area. So it could be that if somebody was projecting themselves, then this was an energy field through there. Has Anu been vanquished? No, there was a coup by members of his family, and this is typical for reptilians, always trying to do each other in, about, what, 2 or 3, 4 years ago now, unintentionally aided by some human workers on the planet who thought they were getting something different. What we've got is a disconnect at the very top. So Anu is not sitting there in charge, but is in another reality within the fourth dimension, just planning, a bit like Sauron in Lord of the Rings, planning and waiting for his time to return, and he ultimately will do. This is just the way it goes with this culture. And that's one of the reasons there's been a disconnect with the elite on the earth, because there hasn't been this one voice says all response. So if you've got different elite family members of the human line trying to connect, and they're getting different answers. I want to thank everybody. This is going out tomorrow, Sunday, and the Christmas special with the music will go out on the 24th of December. So, you know, didn't want to disturb your Christmas Day or your Boxing Day, and didn't really want to clash with the Queen of England, who always traditionally does a speech to subjects. But I thought we'd just come in on Christmas Eve. And it's really nice that we've got one of the new kittens. I'm just going to move a little bit over there, and you can see the kitten there in the bed. So at least we have got some kitten or cat connection. What they made of our talk about the Kekri and the flying lions, I really don't know. Maybe when we do the other casts, we'll have some more cats. So listen, thank you very much indeed for listening. Thank you for your questions. And, you know, we're nearly to a happy holidays. I didn't talk about Brexit. I didn't want to do it. Anything really important comes up, I'll just stick that up as an update on the website. But I just wanted to do away with politics today, please. So God bless you all. Thanks. Take care. Bye-bye.